Well, I don't have any family members that listen to this because they're all lunatics. So, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's okay. We're your family here.
Oh, shucks. Thanks, brother.
I remember you said your wife listens, no?
Oh, yeah. She loves it. I mean, but besides her, like, my mother is, you should see her bookshelf. It is terrifying.
As long as it's not the Obama's books and fucking J.K. Rowling, I'll be happy.
She does stan J.K. Rowling big time.
Oh, Lord. Oh,
but it's usually like the Newt Gingrich, Tucker Carlson, Ben Shapiro stuff. It's just gross.
And does she have like the little, because now I'm imagining like the whole scene. Does she have like little porcelain angels also on the shelves next to the Tucker Carlson books?
She doesn't have porcelain angels, but what my parents do have, they're fascinated with like cultural baubles, so they've got these like they've appropriated things from China. They've got like this little Buddhist porcelain guy. They have some African masks and statues. They've got like a super racist Jim Crow era coin jar thing where you put a coin in the black dude's hand and then you pull a lever and he eats it.
He eats it?
Oh my God.
Yeah.
It goes into his mouth. So you put it and you press the button and he's like, gobble, gobble.
You pull a lever and it lifts his arm and like tips the coin into his mouth. I don't know why he eats it.
Oh, phenomenal. Oh, like, so people sat like at the design tables and they were like, okay, how, like my job is to make these weird little clunky toys, but racism is such a big part of my personality that I have to find a way to make a big clunky toy, which is also extremely racist.
Oh, yeah. It was a need in the market that was filled.
All right. Exactly.
That was the entire United States back then. It's like, say, this would be kind of funny. What if we had a colored fella eating the coins?
That's terrible. My landlady from back in a place I lived at before, and genuinely, in this case, I don't think it was her intention for it to be like bigoted or whatever. She just probably saw it in a store and it was expensive and she bought it. But like there's her TV, pretty big TV that was like attached to the wall. But right under it, she had these massive statues of these two naked African people with like golden rings and golden chains. They were holding their hands up and looking at each other. So what does she do with this? She placed them underneath the TV. So it looks like these two tiny naked Africans are holding this like 65 inch thing. And it's one of the most absurd decorations in an apartment that I've ever seen. But from my conversation, it's like, I am new money, bourgeoisie, own 77 apartments. I want gold and a statue in house. So she happens to have found these two, and they probably, unfortunately, hold up her TV to this day.
You guys have me feeling inadequate. Sadly, I have no family or previous landlords or something that had racist iconography. The only thing that I can remember is one of them had a... I mean, it was more like, ooh, art, you know? I didn't understand the point of it. It was like a cloth... It wasn't a painting. It's like a scene, but it was like embroidered. I don't know how to fucking describe it, right? But it was made of cloth, basically, and it was of an African lady breastfeeding. That's about it. It's just an African lady in traditional garb breastfeeding. Is it racist? I don't know. Maybe.
Well, that at least sounds like a tasteful presentation of art. I don't know.
Actually, no. Actually, it could be a bit racist because the background was a hut. I think that makes it racist.
They're just making assumptions.
Because the woman was dressed in like a very modern, you know, she looked in like she had high quality attire and everything. I think she was even wearing a watch and everything. But behind her was like a hut and like a spear.
You gotta have the spear and the really tall oblong shield.
yeah. Like, I don't know. Is it supposed to be like, oh, cultural representation? Or is it... I don't know.
You tell us, viewers, is it racist? We'll find all the artifacts around our family's homes and ask you guys, is it racist?
New segment.
Yeah. The whole thing is like made in Sri Lanka, but ordered by like a firm from fucking Newcastle, England, and then it's being sold to this motherfucker in Iraq. The beauty of the globalized market space. Everybody, you know, like the Oprah video, you get a car, you get a car. Well, capitalism gave us, you get a semi-racist African lady feeding a child. You get a semi-racist African lady breastfeeding a child. And we all get it in our homes. Excellent.
That it's you have two choices. Which way, white man? the black woman breastfeeding or the weird coin eating Jim Crow toy?
Which way, Western man? Well, howdy, y'all. It's episode 11. We thought this time we would go back to our roots a little bit and really lean into the deprogramming aspect of the show. And we thought we'd talk about some tools that we found useful to help radicalize people, to help deprogram people if they have some bad ideas, and just the experiences we've had online and in real life talking to people about socialist ideas and how that's been, the pushback we've gotten, the success we've seen, because I think we all probably have our fair share of both successes and failures. So I'll open it up to you guys. What do you want to talk about? You want to talk about our channels a little bit?
Yeah, so with my channel, the I think you'll see that there's like, all of us have very unique channels, I think, between myself, Yugopnik, and JT. The reason I started mine, and that's probably very clear when you watch my videos, is that I wanted to kind of rebut or debunk, if you even want to use that word, the common arguments that you hear against socialism or socialist history and other related topics when you discuss socialism, whenever you try to go about even bringing the topic up, not even as radicalization, just as a conversation that you have with a person. And then you get the usual, you know, 60 gorillion billion people dead and fucking Mao ate babies and, you know, socialism always fails and what if, you know, Vuvuzela no iPhone? You know, the usual stupid arguments.
The important questions.
Yeah, exactly. But the reason that I started my channel was just kind of to hit back on those talking points. And eventually then I found that, hey, making these videos is a bit fun. So then I decided to do my own thing, occasionally react to some stupid videos, which kind of also leads into it because the vast majority of the stuff that I react to has the arguments that regular people hear. And maybe that helps to kind of like wade through all that bullshit and give some responses. But that was mine. I think by far my channel is the least sophisticated of the three, especially when it comes to analysis and whatnot. I like to just kind of give answers to questions. It's a very back and forth thing. I'll lead into how this goes into radicalization or helping radicalizing IRL. But maybe the boys wanna talk about their channels as well.
Well, as you guys probably know, for my channel, I didn't start doing socialist content until, time is fake these days, a year and a half ago, something like that, maybe pushing 2 years now.
Build the lib audience, big brain, build it for several years. Then...
I've got a captive audience, and then I like tape their eyes open and make them watch my current stuff. but... It's worked out pretty well, honestly. But there came a point when I was like, all right, I've got all these people and I have these personal convictions that are important to me and that I'd like to share with people. And I wished that I had someone to help me through this stuff, to help me learn these things when I was starting out. And so I figured, well, that's kind of what my YouTube channel's been. I've been teaching people stuff at a 101 level, so why not turn it into socialism 101? And that's kind of what I stuck with, and it is frustrating because when you're aiming at that audience, you do get a lot of reactionary comments, a lot of people who don't quite understand what they're watching. But it's overall, I think it's been positive. I've gotten a lot of good responses. I've gotten a lot of emails saying that I've helped people change their opinions and things like that. And then of course, I get plenty of email death threats too. So fair's fair. But that's my approach. It's been, how would I have liked this explained to me when I was first starting to learn this stuff? And that's an approach that I hope to continue going forward. But Yugopnik, what about you?
Thank you. With me, it was in a similar way with you guys, obviously, an espoused interest towards socialism, anti-capitalism, anti-fascism, etc., etc. But kind of the niche that I found as more and more content I put out there was trying to, by understanding, at least in my, to my modest extent, the way capitalism operates, I found that it influences parts of your life that you wouldn't even think of just because it is set up the way it is. So I wanted to look at different aspects of people's everyday lives, but not only everyday lives, but things that influence absolutely everything they experience to a larger or lower extent, and link it to the way capitalism operates and the way it, for example, influences them. So I went from topics like as niche as how it influences your dating life, and answered kind of questions on why are we brushing past people and dating like as if we were picking objects out of you know, a store window, and why are we creating relationships that are more like the relationships between buyer and consumer than necessarily between two people who love each other. That and the topics like, and capitalism's link to, be it violence, be it more general stuff like elections, be it your economic inability to do what you want with your own life, be it with modesty, be it with the way it co-opts religion, etc., etc. I constantly try to concentrate on, again, very specific things, which I, to my own surprise, realized are very, very messed up, not because it is in human nature for them to be as such, but that they are a direct consequence of the system as it is. And I found that it's very, you know, captivating for a lot of people. For others, it's actually not. My approach, for example, would not work for people who already have it stuck in their head that communists are people that are running around and blaming absolutely everything on capitalism. So when a person like this sees like a video like, why is capitalism ruining your love life, they will not click, or they would watch it only to dunk on it with no particular argumentation, because to them, I guess I'm continuing the stereotype of someone who is blaming everything on the system, even though honestly most things are. But the other type of person, a more open-minded type of person than a person who might be struggling in a specific aspect of their life, linking that struggle, realistically, not lying to them, but linking that struggle to their realization that the struggle is coming out of the way we are organizing, at the end of the day, our economy, does a lot, in my opinion, of good in giving this person class consciousness and actually pushing them towards the left in general.
That's cool. I think it's fun to have three, you know, kind of different approaches on our different each of our channels, so that there's a bit of overlap, because we talk about a lot of the same subject matter, but from a different perspective and with a different approach. And I hope that our viewers like all of our channels, or at least some of them, and find them useful in converting others. But enough about us, I think, and our channel specifically. Let's talk about some experiences we've had and the tools we like to use when talking to people and trying to win them over to our cause.
I think the number one issue, and this is because I see it so often, is that when you get exposed to socialism for the first time, it's kind of like, not to be, you know, kind of overdramatic about this, but your eyes do really get opened to things that you, before you didn't really understand why things happened the way they did, and then you understand socialism, you read into Marx, and you read about the analysis of capitalism that Marx and those who built upon his analysis as well, you know, actual material of it, and then you begin to understand how the world kind of is, why, especially if you're from, for example, from the third world, and you may have had a personal experience with imperialism and with the raw deal that capitalism gives, as Stossel said, Fuck, it's the, what a disgusting way of putting it. Especially that fucking mummy-looking dude. Fucking hell. His mustache looks like it's fucking stapled on.
I had a teacher who would show John Stossel every day. She loved him, and we'd have to watch him in class.
You know, when I've never heard of this guy in my life before I made that fucking video. And the amount of people in the comments that told me, is like, oh, in high school, in uni, yeah. They would fucking show these videos. I'm like, what the fuck? What is this? How is this legal? How?
I don't know.
Oh God. Anyways, yeah,
I have no idea who that is. Like zero.
He is a, I believe, a Fox News. He was a Fox News like reporter or journalist, whatever you want to call it.
I felt that awkward for a second. Thing. I was like, maybe this is a philosopher or somebody. I was like, Jesus, I'm stupid.
No. Habib, you're better off that you don't know who this dude is.
Okay, I'll keep it that way, I guess.
Yeah, it's the usual fucking, oh, Vuvuzela, fucking 3 billion people
fucking
dead.
Stuff that's
very
difficult to masturbate to. Yeah, I know, classic.
Exactly, yeah. Literally, there's one part where there's like, oh, planning doesn't work, and then they have a picture of Stalin and his brain floating above Stalin's head, and it's like, oh, planning doesn't work because one person has to know, like, everything that happens in the economy. I'm like, what? What the fuck? Like, that's not even remote. All right, whatever. Like, whatever. But
that's why we need CEOs also at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah. Very, very coherent and logical worldview they have. Mm. But yeah, my point being is that once you actually are exposed to these ideas and you begin to understand a bit, you tend to be a bit zealous or overzealous in how you want to kind of, I don't want to say preach it, but you want to go and have conversations with people and talk to those you know, because you're excited to have this information to, you know, release it onto others. And the thing that I've noticed, is especially with new Marxists, is that they're way too, like, you know, dial it back a bit. You're at fucking 12 when you should be at a 2 or a 3 when you're talking to people, because you come off way too strong. And the very first objections that you get from them are usually very simple ones. Like, oh, what about innovation? You know, oh, we need the workers and the capitalists. Like, this fucking bullshit. And you need to realize that when people say these things, they're not attacking you or socialism. Most of the time, they're saying it out of complete ignorance. But when you're very new to socialism, you tend to, again, be kind of highly driven, and you want to, you take this as a, ooh, you know, fucking debate me, bro. And you kind of, I think, really not scare people off, but you turn them off of even discussing socialism or these things more deeply. You see this, of course, online, but I've seen this more personally in real life with the people, new socialists, new Marxists. Yeah, so TLDR, just don't be overzealous, tone it down a bit, be very kind and courteous when you discuss with people. Before you even discuss anything at all, by the way, that's the base point you start out. You should be always very polite, you should always listen to what they have to say, even if there's a bit of, like, you know, obvious, what's it called, dismissiveness, you can say, because that's usually, especially if you're talking to an older person about socialism, and you usually tend to be younger, they'll get into this fucking boomer, oh, you know, I'm fucking, my prostate is enlarged, and it takes me 5 minutes to pee, I can't get it up, so I must know, I know better, you know, that shit, but yeah, so they usually do this talking down thing to you, and even if that happens, take your time, take it in good stride, and have a polite conversation. You won't get them the first time, right? But if you have this conversation frequently enough, it will get to them. My like way of tying this all together is, I had a friend who basically, I used to talk socialism with this person since high school, basically. And this person was a lukewarm liberal their entire life, basically. You know, very, you know, oh, if only, you know, we had a bit more state regulation and we should be more like the EU, like that fucking garbage. And slowly but surely, you know, over, I think, 3-4 years of talking to them about socialism, finally it clicked. That, you know, socialism is the way forward. The critiques of capitalism are actually appropriate. What's it called? Misconceptions about socialist history being tackled one at a time. And then eventually, now they've reached the point where, you know, they were, and then, by the way, the end point of that was reading Parenti, which is, yes, beautiful. And we're going to get into book recommendations later. But my point being is that eventually this particular person started identifying as a Marxist themselves, started reading more, and now they've actually take part in organizations and whatnot. They are fully fledged Marxist, even though this conversation, like, or this transition took many years and took many conversations, and I wasn't the only person who was working on this person, if you want to word it that way. It happened. So that's, yeah. Be patient, be polite, don't be overzealous, and turn people off, and don't be a dick. That's the TLDR. Sorry, I took up way too much fucking time. You guys take it away from me.
No, I think that's a super important point that I think tends to be left by the wayside in favor of things like, okay, what are the correct answers I need to have to these questions that they're gonna give me, these objections? But yeah, it's just don't be an asshole. Like, you're not an evangelical, and on the flip side of that, you're also not an r/atheism combative cringe lord. Just present your thoughts kindly. Yeah, just be nice. Present your thoughts kindly. Be reasonable. And don't do it in an I know better than you kind of way. In my experience, explaining why you believe the things that you do and not why they should believe them, at least at first, tends to be a little bit more welcomed by the people you're speaking to.
Absolutely. Could not agree more. I mean, you need to remember that you're in this to change minds and to, more importantly, help people, you know, get to a point where they have class consciousness, which, yes, ignorance is bliss, but honestly, seeing the world the way it is realistically is one of the most freeing ways you can actually live. But yeah, you got to remember that when you're introducing people to these concepts, as both JT and Hakeem said, it's not about winning. It's about spreading a concept and introducing them to it, and not about, winning in the battlefield of ideas and all that other garbage. Like, you're not on Reddit, my friend. Like, you're logged off. Try to...
But what about the updudes? What about the ups and the updude arenas?
What if someone clips me?
What? Oh, fuck. Ratio. Imagine going to somebody in real fucking life.
Just saying ratio.
Oh, fucking three people disagree with you. Ratio. I'm sorry. This is stupid. I'm sorry. I think that's generally a very good point, though. You're not online. So, yeah. You know, like, there is a different culture, I guess, about how you should discuss with people. And talking online is... Yeah, it has its uses. Most of the time, it's useless. I think engagement online is good for one reason, and it's to hone your skills for when you actually talk to a person in real life. That's my personal experience. Usually those, you know, like 14-paragraph essays that you write when you're in fucking middle school about, I don't fucking know why. Oh, why fucking... Why the you know, degenerate Slavs brought down the fucking... Or whatever, you brought down the Roman Empire. You know, that shit. That never actually has any meaning beyond, you know, just like masturbation, really. Intellectual masturbation. I think if you were to, you know, discuss a lot online and to quote unquote debate, which is also pretty much useless, do it just so that you familiarize yourself with talking points. And again, not to be combative. Is it combative or combative?
Combative.
What's the fucking word? Combative. Okay, sorry, I'm stupid. Yeah, not to be combative with people in real life, but to be able to anticipate them and then kind of have the response tree ready. Now, people might think this is kind of weird, but I've noticed this in my personal life, and I actually want to get your guys' input on this. Usually, as a Marxist, and you, when you go to talk to people, they expect you to know everything about everything. Yes. That's kind of one of the banes of being a socialist. They expect you to know everything from like the nitty-gritty of Marx's economic analysis to what happened in April of 1932 in the fucking Soviet Union, right? To, you know, like, oh, China and Cuba and Angola and fucking what's the Frankfurt School? Like, you know, you need to know everything about everything. Basically. And there's nothing wrong with saying I don't know, of course, but it's better to practice, like, you know, or to reinforce your knowledge so that there's a power that comes with being sure of yourself, not being arrogant or you know, like actually knowing the material, but when you are confident, that's the word in English, when you're confident in your knowledge and you present it to somebody, it'll have more of an effect than if you're very wishy-washy and you seem yourself like you're not very convinced of it, or you don't have all the facts, so they might think like, oh, like you yourself don't know all that I personally consider to be convincing for this, so why should I be convinced of this train of thought, etc. But yeah, that's actually something to throw to you guys about the requiring to be knowledgeable of absolutely everything. What do you guys think?
Yeah, they also expect you to be able to fully elucidate a future communist society and every mechanism by which it functions. Like, I don't know. Like, we can't. That's not possible. That's not something that we can provide you, friend. But yeah, it is difficult when the entire burden of knowing and understanding the world is placed on your shoulders. And if you show any kind of weakness or uncertainty, then all of your knowledge and talking points will be just dismissed, which is frustrating, but it's something you need to overcome.
That's why timing is, I would say, is extremely important, because you both timing when it comes to understanding where you're at, who you're with, and is this the moment when I should be talking about politics? No, very often it is not. You're just nutted in someone. You shouldn't lean over and start explaining what dialectical materialism is.
Please, that's praxis.
Absolutely. So they link the post-orgasm bliss or post-orgasm depression with the ideology. But no. So yes, timing is extremely important. And secondly, timing, just how well-informed the other person is as well. Because you need to be ready for questions that might sound very irritating and very cliche, and things you've talked about for 7 billion times already being thrown at you with someone who knows very little or anything about this. And obviously with your timing and pacing should be different when you're talking to a person that already believes themselves that they are subscribers of ideology A, B, C, or D, which, you know, is both a reactionary ideology, or very often them thinking that they're apolitical, which is, in my opinion, the most political you can be. And when you the arguments you start with, and not just start with, but the way you answer questions, or sometimes, yes, it's necessary the way you delay questions or say that you're going to get back to them on it, et cetera, et cetera, play a major role. Because obviously that you're not going to be talking to someone who is 32 and has been a liberal for a very long time the same way you would talk to a very, for example, reactionary, very conservative right-wing person, right? And also when you're talking to, for example, someone who has either a background or even education in things that are relatively linked to the economic and political understanding of the way society is ran. And when you're explaining someone who is explaining it to someone who has never actually espoused too much interest in politics, it's different, because with those, you're not only introducing them to this whole new ideology, but you're introducing them to politics in general, which can sometimes feel like you're telling them shit they don't even want to listen to, or even worse, feel like you're being cocky and over-explanatory and a piece of shit intellectual in front of someone who might be struggling to get a hold of all of the points that you're making. So yeah, timing both with the location, and timing with knowing how far along they are in whatever school of thought that they subscribe to, or even worse, subscribe to none.
To build up on that a bit, basically, in a very rounded way, it's to tailor your speaking points to your audience, who you're talking to. For example, if you're talking to a religious person, maybe, and you would need to be familiar with that person's particular religious background, and that religion itself, then you could tie the various ideas of, you know, like anti, what's it called in English? It's not called being anti-rich. like against wealth hoarding and whatnot. For example, just as an example, the, you know, a camel going through the head of a needle type of examples, etc. Examples against usury, that's a common against a common in all Abrahamic religions. It's the thing that the entire capitalist system is built atop, but it's basically illegal in all religious, at least Abrahamic that I'm familiar with, religious trends. So that's something that you can use to your advantage, basically tailor to your audience. But also you should know when to expend the energy and when to not. There are some people that just won't be on your side. I don't mean like, oh, somebody's he's far right or something. And he's edgy, and no, like these people you can still talk to. But sometimes, let's say you're talking to a person who is a, let's say, a middle-aged landlord with 12 properties and stuff, like this person you're most likely not going to get on your side. You know, you can have the conversation, you can try, nothing's stopping you. But some people, just by virtue of their material conditions, are going to see themselves more or identify themselves more either as petit bourgeois, or they might fancy themselves full on, you know, bourgeois, and then they want to, you know, they realize that their class interests do not lay with socialism and with the proletariat, with the working class, but lays with the other side. And these people, again, you can have the conversation, but most of the time you don't really need to expend the energy. There are better ways to spend it. Of course, even when you do that, remember to be polite and to listen to other people and whatnot. But a important point remember is that the people that are most susceptible and accessible to radicalizations are those directly around you, so your family, friends, and whatnot, who you should be having these conversations with. That's a bit easier than, you know, just talking to some random person. I don't know. There are people out there who do that. It should be easier for you because you already have the built-up rapport, and you have more, I guess, leeway because these aren't absolute strangers. These are people who are close to you in life, and these conversations can go on for much longer, so that something fruitful may come out of it. Of course, the best like conclusion of all this is to join an organization if you do plan to do any proper attempts at radicalization, because you know, the sum is greater than its parts. It's easier to be part of a directed effort at spreading class consciousness and educating people rather than just, you know, being on your own and doing your own thing.
Yeah. Talking about the speaking with people who are closest to you, I'd like to get your guys' opinions on this, but my personal opinion is you should really do your best to know whether you're capable of handling family and friend relationship strain before you attempt this kind of conversation. Because if conflict or disagreement is difficult for you, I don't think you should try to win over your loved ones, because that can cause some serious strife. And if you really care about these people and if you're around them a lot, that can be painful or difficult to deal with or lead to damaged relationships. For example, my mother, bless her heart, she's a wonderful woman, but she has some very, very bad political ideas, and she does not deal with conflict well at all. So I tried to talk to her a while back, and it started what was essentially like a 6-month blood feud where we just didn't speak. She wouldn't talk to me. So that's something you need to be aware of, and it's that, I think, is an extreme example. That typically won't happen when you're dealing with, you know, rational adults. But it is something to be aware of, both about yourself and your loved ones that you're speaking to, because it can adversely affect your mental health. It can put a lot of strain on your relationships, and it could just cause your family to put up walls that are detrimental to living in proximity with them.
Exactly.
That's a very good point, actually. I think, I stand corrected. That is a very good point. I'm lucky enough that I haven't had this personal experience, but again, that's the point of talking with people to expand your mind. JT, excellent point, yeah. Listen to, you guys know your own conditions and your own family situations and whatnot better, so if it's something that you should kind of skirt and not talk too much about, then maybe not. But there's one point that I forgot to add, which is you won't get everybody, of course, when you do try to radicalize people or discuss. But if you do find somebody who you think is appropriate to discuss with, then even if you don't get them entirely to be a Marxist, it's still, if you give them something like food for thought, or you get them to see at least some aspect of it, maybe to see why anti-imperialism is good, or just to change, like, for example, a big win is to turn, in my opinion, an American person who is either indifferent or pro-US military to be less than indifferent or anti-US military and US military interventions and whatnot. That is a major win. As a third world Arab, that is a major win.
It's not easy to do either. Yeah, that's huge if you get that.
Exactly right. So they might not be a Marxist at the end of the day, but it's still something that you did that will tangibly, if compounded, of course, will benefit the global socialist movement and, of course, us poor Browns. So consider that avenue as well. But yeah, it's okay. You don't get everybody.
Yeah, it is a process. I mean, people won't go from lib or apolitical to full-blown commie in one easy step. Like, it's going to take time, like Akeem was saying. But also, I think it's important to learn to identify bad faith actors or people who are just trying to nitpick all your arguments. Just don't waste your time on somebody who's just looking to pick a fight and has no intention of actually entertaining your ideas. It can be hard to tell. I mean, some people are just naturally a little bit more abrasive than others. And you don't want to just dismiss those people because you could lose out on a potential comrade down the line. But there are plenty of people out there, and a lot of them just live on the internet and are looking to start a fight, that just want to start a fight. That's all they exist to do. So learn to develop a radar for those kind of people if you can, and you'll develop that over time. You'll be able to see the red flags, well, the bad red flags. but yeah, that's just one other thing to look out for.
It is, and just in the same manner in which people are sometimes never going to be acceptable of, be it your introduction to whatever way of thought or honestly anybody else's, there's people that are the complete contrast of that, who do have certain values, and very often values that are completely in line with what we're trying to pitch over here, yet they don't know how to, what terms to use for what they actually believe in. These are like so-called whatever organic progressives or organic socialists, quote unquote, that might have been scared away from the terminology, et cetera, because of, well, literally half a century worth of Red Scare propaganda. And those can be very easy people to introduce to the ideology, because you can openly talk to them about the things that they care about and that they espouse, and explain to them how the system as it is right now is not allowing those specific ideas to come to fruition, and how an alternative would allow their optimistic, again, ideals to not just be ideals, but to be potential reality. A lot of people hold it already in them, the fruits of what for some others it would take years of active learning and pursuit and reading, etc. They hold it in themselves just because of, for example, the life experiences that they've had. And helping them learn how to communicate that better, how to understand just what they are, what they believe in, can do wonders, and is just a very easy win to introduce someone to the ideas we're trying to, we're explaining here.
Yeah, and don't feel the need to use all the jargon right off the bat. I mean, you can talk about socialist ideas without using the more scientific terms. Just relate to the person you're talking to. That's how I've had a lot of success on my channel, is I can talk about these issues that are relevant to people, like Ugopnik was saying, and not use the big scary terms that people have come to associate with, the evil Soviet Union or anything like that. Just use common everyday language. Don't use giant words. You can talk about dialectical materialism without using the terminology, and that, I believe, will help you kind of create a rapport with the people you're talking to or who are watching your videos, and then later, then you can start introducing those ideas. When they come to you with questions about, okay, what about the specifics? Then you can say, all right, there's a term for that. Let me show you what it is. Let me show you where you can read about it.
Or often they'll find it themselves. Like, people are pretty fucking intelligent when you give them enough space. You knowing more about the ideology doesn't mean you should fucking lord over them as some sort of intellectual giant or whatever. Yeah. And as we're saying here, like, people have particular problems in their life that are inextricably linked to the corrupt manner in which the system operates. So take that, deconstruct it for them, and then when they see just how much influence it has, for example, on the fact that they'll have to be paying off a loan for the next 30 years only because, oh my God, they wanted to go to a place and learn something. When you explain to them why those loans exist, why they are so steep, why education is so expensive, and link it to the way, for example, the system operates, that will be the doorway for them into the ideology in general. Yes, sure, some of them might just become libs that only care about one issue, you know. Give me this, and after that we'll go back to brunch, as they say. And there's going to be normies like this all the time. That doesn't mean that you should feel like a normie yourself, because you're tackling specific issues that they care about. Not all of them will go back to brunch. A lot of them will understand that if certain rights can be won, if certain changes can be implemented, then in a right way that we talked about many times here on the podcast, in a full swoop, everything can also be brought to the front as the new normal, quote unquote.
Yeah, a lot of Americans will start out as, hey, I just want healthcare, man. And then from there, then they'll start learning more about socialist ideas, actually socialist ideas, because typically those people were Bernie supporters, and they appreciate his, you know, vaguely left of the American center ideas. And once they realize that that's not all that crazy in most of the rest of the world, and they're like, oh, that's actually very common. All right, so why is it so difficult here? Then it's a process of them just learning more. That's how it worked for me. It's how it worked for a lot of my friends, and I think that will continue to be the case. So just kind of keep prodding people. If you have friends like that, just be like, all right, let's explore a little bit deeper into that.
Yeah, and for example, I don't want to speak in your name, but for Hakim, imperialism and why it happens all over the globe would be an incredibly important something you could hook someone to. Similar with me, yes, imperialism, but more like economic imperialism, and people are all the time talking about, but dude, one of my friends, like, I work for, I don't know, fucking IBM, and one of my friends works for IBM over in Germany, and in Germany they're paying him like 12 fucking thousand euros a month, and they'll pay me here like 300. Like, what the fuck is going on? So you hook him with this, and then you explain to him that fucking peasants like you have to exist so that the corporate overlord can make his fucking dough. And your friend over in Germany eventually is also not going to exist, because they'll migrate more and more of the jobs to fellow east, more east, so that they can, I'm not going to go into this whole fucking thing. But yeah, you start with a thing, and then you push it forward. It sounds simple, but it's fucking, everybody forgets it.
But no, that's a very good point. We always have to remember that capitalism sucks for the vast majority of people. It really sucks. It's not nice to be, you know, underpaid at your job and then have 70% of your wage go to, you know, fucking rent, and, you know, in some places 70% just goes to rent outright, and the 30% is just supposed to feed into everything else. But in other places, maybe like, what, 30% goes to rent. Ooh, where do you live? And the other, like, 10% is this, 10% is that. Just living stuff, you know, like just basic insurances and shit like this. Nothing, you know, extravagant. You're not going out and getting yourself a fucking Gucci bag. If, I don't know why you would do that, but just as a, you know, hypothetical, nobody is living in luxury in this sort of way.
Yeah, just get a Louis Vuitton one, you dumb peasant.
Oh, fuck. But yeah, no, the point being is that the arguments are in your favor, because the vast majority of people are working class, and the vast majority of working class people are not having the best of times. Maybe they're not having the worst time ever, but it's not particularly good, especially for how good we are told it is, right? Of course, you can get into a conversation of, oh, yeah, but, you know, most people in the West, it's a labor aristocracy, and, you know, they might have their direct interests are in line with their, yeah. These are theoretical points that you have at the party, or, you know, at your organizational space. Most of the time, when you have a conversation with regular people, you can hook them with even the most basic socialist talking points. And of course, you shouldn't shy away from appealing to the emotional, of course. Not everybody's convinced. Actually, the vast majority of people are not convinced by, watertight argumentation. They're more convinced by things that they directly experience in their life and how they relate to them, right? So talking to an American person about how broken the American healthcare system is, especially when they have personal experience with it, would make more sense than talking about, I don't know, the fucking Reserve Army of Labor or the Falling Rate of Profit. Actually, Reserve Army of Labor, unemployment, you can make a thing out of that. But the Falling Rate of Profit, which is a very strong argument for, you know, the criticism of capitalism, makes very little sense to most people at first glance, because it needs to be explained to them and whatnot. So yeah, tie it to their actual lived experience, and you'll get much further with them.
Exactly.
Yeah, you got to make excellent point.
Thank you, likewise, both of you. And yes, so to their specific living conditions, but also what I just thought of, very important. Also to like their personality, my man, the way the type of person you are. Like I had immense success talking to fellow Eastern Europeans with a place which is, least to say, very fucking hyper-masculine, sometimes in a relatively good way, very often not in a fucking good way. They've been spoon-fed the propaganda of soft socialism, being soft and this and that, and from the West and shit. But then you turn that on their head and look them straight in the eye and be like, you're supporting the status quo, which means getting ass fucked by your fucking boss every day or every month when you receive 1/10 of what you actually earn him, and you're pretending, sitting here and pretending to be some sort of fucking alpha chad. No, you're not. You're a peasant slaving away. And a ideology which is offering you quite the opposite, for you to actually take matters into your own hands and actually be given what you quote-unquote fully deserve, is what I'm trying to sell you here. So you thinking you're a free market capitalist badass motherfucker while being a slave cuck is...
Sigma Grinds,
yeah, it's not something you should be a supporter of. And then you play, for example, on this hyper masculine ego, and they go like they you know, the like cogs start turning in that dusty steroid filled brain, right? But obviously, this will not work with other people, right? Who don't care about the like their position in society or whatever. So yeah, both their current material conditions and what they're concerned about, but also, come on, yeah, we're pretty different, all of us, and different people want to be introduced to it on an emotional basis in a very different way than somebody else would.
But no, I was gonna say, yeah, about talking, when you're talking to other Yugoslav people about socialism, it's like, oh, it's soft. Yeah, socialism in Yugoslavia was so soft that it single-handedly defeated fascism without any allied aid. I mean, come on, the fuck. But yeah, it's I never understood where this talking point came from. Of course, it's projection. Actually, it's always fascist projection. They're always these fucking soft bodies, and you know, they're never the Aryan specimens that they like to present themselves as. Yeah, like it's tied into this weird masculine insecurity, and fascism is the most contradictory ideology, and also pathetic in how they view themselves and how they relate to others. It's I personally never understood the soft point, the like, oh, you know, you're socialist, you must mean you have green hair and you want to be vegan. So by the way, you can be vegan and have green hair and be a badass.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Or you can be like, you know, eat nothing but meat, like our boy fucking Jordan Peterson, the Lobster King, right?
Be pathetic.
And have a benzo addiction and then be interned in fucking in Russia because it'd be in a medically induced coma. Like, come on. No, my point being is that, yeah, you can be, the stereotype makes no sense, right? You can be fucking vegan or whatever the fuck and be a strong person mentally, physically, otherwise, or you can be a meat eater with, you know, free market ideal, oh, the wealth will fucking trickle down, all that bullshit, and still be a complete, you know, a coward in real life, have no mental fortitude, not be able to, you know, stand up for your ideals or whatnot when it matters, which is what most right-wing people are, by the way. Very few of them fancy themselves as the, you know, the contra types who are going to go to Nicaragua and shoot those evil commies. Most of them will, you know, just kind of flip over to whatever side will allow them to continue being careerists and whatnot. That's what we see with Democrats and Republicans. Yeah, whatever, fucking one party, one, you choose between the Capitalist Party, the other Capitalist Party, you know, I'll rant forever, but yeah.
While we're talking about the right wing, one thing I'd like to get you guys' takes on is trying to convert those people. Like I've seen a lot of discourse on it on Twitter about it recently, and in my opinion, I would say don't fall into the "oh, I can fix him" mindset of trying to convert Nazis. Like every far right chud you deprogram is one less we have to deal with later, but it also takes more work, I would say, than an apolitical person. And at the end of it, all you're left with, at best, is a highly suspect comrade, somebody who had some really, really damaging and frankly disgusting ideas to begin with that is now on your team. What do you guys think?
If I may just add just a quick thing, I think personally with these people, number one, vast majority of these like far-right types grow out of it themselves, especially when they're young and terminally online. They're just on a bunch of, you know, sus Discord servers and they watch a few strange channels and whatever. They'll grow out of it, most of them. But also, I think it's less worth it because these people tend to be mostly young white men who are terminally online. This is not the, you know, the... It seems like you're focusing all... Exactly how JT is saying, you're focusing all this organizing energy on people who... this energy could be better used elsewhere, right? There's nothing, of course, like, I hate how to say that, like, there's nothing wrong with being a fucking white young guy, but if you're a white young dude who's terminally online and has very, like yikes, political beliefs when it comes to, you know, race and gender and even economically and whatnot, the general attitude towards these people is more like it would be more combative when you talk with them about it, and then they're gonna not be the most susceptible to the way you talk. And also, even if you, just like JT said, even if you do win them over, it's gonna be kind of a suspicion. What's the fucking word? Not susceptible. Not it's an S word.
Highly suspect beliefs.
Suspect belief. Thank you. A suspect person that you have converted over to our cause, etc., etc. TLDR, don't waste too much fucking time on people who are, number one, terminally online, and number two, from a particular group where, you know, like, yeah, there's this all this talk about, oh, they're far right and they're dangerous, but like you saw, the minute after the fucking January 6th thing happened, all of them just fell away like flies, all right,
yeah.
Because they have no conviction in their beliefs, and they don't, you know, they're afraid of even seeing a federal prison. They don't have the fucking political conviction to go all the way with their beliefs. Most of them don't really even have these beliefs. They just found a sense of community maybe in some of these groupings. And of course, like we talked in a previous episode, they have some, like, they feel maybe inadequate in their masculinity and all this kind of stuff. And this kind of leads into their far-right politics. Exactly what JT said. I didn't build up on anything. You can cut all this out.
I would just like, I would also like to add something that probably will end up being me adding nothing. But with right wing people, and specifically, you gotta, in my opinion, you gotta look at it as a, I don't know, as a tumor, which can be at a very early stage and can be rooted out. And you could potentially have a very healthy individual after that. Or like an animal with a very, very late stage. Developed thing that looks like a baseball, where honestly Minecraft character needs to be put down. depending on just how far along they are in their radicalization to the right, you can either have a, you know, a pup, quote unquote, which is looking for community, looking for something different, feels alienated, yes, very often by capitalism itself, and because of bad luck, getting in the wrong Discord server, getting to the wrong video, getting to the wrong article, clicking on the wrong clickbait article, went down this rabbit hole of intense radicalization. And unfortunately, when it reaches a certain point when they are a full-on convinced fascist, there's very little to do about these, as we refer to them, reactionaries. But at the same time, in the beginning, or at least in the early stages, in my opinion, obviously, these are people that, as Hakim said, are not even that convinced. I'm not talking about the Jan 6 people, but I'm talking about young people leaning towards conservatism and fascism. They're looking for something. They just have their hands open towards something that's more radical than the status quo. You know, the funny memes, the big explosions, the smiling frogs that the right gives them crazy amounts of fucking dopamine in the head. So they happen to go there. But the what I'm saying is that the left could profit and could potentially have a part of its work done for itself by giving a hand out to these people before they're too far down the rabbit hole. So I'm not saying waste crazy amounts of time with these people, etc., etc. I'm saying quite the opposite. When you see somebody too down the rabbit hole, you got to understand that this is a systematic problem and your hand isn't long enough to go down the rabbit hole and actually get them. You need fucking ropes and a lot of them. And not all of those ropes are going to go around their hand. But, okay, that's a bit too much. Jesus Christ. But if the rabbit hole is shallow enough for a hand to be reached out and for a potential young life to be steered away from the insanity of a cult, which is fascism, I think it's in all of us to kind of reach out. Because all of us at some point, for example, me not with fascism, but all of us with something in our life have been a complete piece of shit imbecile at some point, and somebody steered us back in the right direction. We just gotta remember, just like with your cousin who's a 20-year drug addict that just stole your TV, you know, don't waste your time going fucking around trying to fucking save this dude. It's been 20 years. Same with somebody starting to interact with good old Hitlerism, baby.
Yeah, I think a lot of these issues is very well put, Jigopnik. You actually turned my bullshit into something coherent, as always. Thank you. But I think, yeah, that's a point generally, is that the vast majority of I would say, social political ills, be they fascism or other strange, you know, political or ideological philosophies.
Like eating shrimp?
Fuck you. I stand by my fucking... shrimp is delicious, okay? You're just a bunch of, like I said, culinary philistines.
Now you're eating shrimp, and then you're going to tell me you wipe your ass from the back.
Have you? I use a bidet.
Yeah, but you wipe after you use the bidet?
Yeah,
so it's not watery, right? Yeah, of course. But then do you cup about below your ball sack and then swipe from the front? Or do you swipe from the back?
No, I've never given it that much fucking thought.
Don't remember how you wipe your ass. Okay, whatever. JT, how do you wipe your ass? From the front or the back?
From the front, dude. Who wipes from the back?
No, I agree with Akeem on this one, on this very important topic.
Yeah, this is okay. If you read in the second volume of Lenin's collective works, you find out that the ideologically pure way is to go from the front. Anyways, my point being, which is fucking derailed now, was, yeah, a lot of these social ills, political, ideological, and whatnot, these things will be weeded out under socialism, mostly. You can't, you know, all these youths who kind of personally feel that the current system doesn't fulfill them, they have issues that they don't see satisfactory answers to, they don't really look for satisfactory answers to, they see an easy answer that's usually wrong, usually racist or sexist or otherwise, and then they kind of latch onto it, then they go and find a community of people, and then even though they're not that convinced politically, that community kind of reinforces that those political beliefs, and then they kind of feel that in-group, you know, vibe, and then it just kind of goes down from there. These are issues that would need to be dealt with on a like national scale, like the United States and the radicalization, far-right radicalization issues, this is something that would need to be done on a national level. This is not something a bunch of organizations of people volunteering their time can entirely work out. They can do some good work, but they can't entirely weed out. This is something, you know, and of course, by the American system is directly built to feed this because these far-right lunatics are the ones who go into the military and the police stations and the every other, and then the fucking ICE guards and whatever. So, it's much more complicated than what you can do as an individual, and that's why we say it's probably a better idea to not focus all your energy on this sort of thing, and maybe focus it on where it will be much more fruitful, because you only have so much time and energy to put into this. So that's the final bow to set on this very messy, messily delivered argument.
No, I think that was very good. Well, I think we all have some book recommendations, but before we do that, why don't we each share like one positive experience we've had with radicalization or getting someone just to listen to socialist ideas, just to give the listener some hope that they can do it too.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to go first, JT?
Sure, I'll go first. All right, so one time IRL that I had some success was a friend group that I'm tangentially related to, we get together every once in a while, does an annual event called a Lit Talk, where everyone gets drunk and we give like a PowerPoint presentation on something that we care about. So one dude did a presentation on The Witcher series. One dude did it on blackjack. And I did mine on socialism. And these people know that I'm a socialist and know what I do on my channel. But none of them would classify themselves as socialist. They're all, you know, fairly typical American religious centrists-ish. They would kind of identify more with the conservative side while being decent people. But we were each given about 10 minutes to give these presentations. And like we've been talking about this entire episode, I use some of those approaches that we've outlined here. So I left out all the jargon. I tried not to be combative. I tried to be understanding. I tried to meet people where they were. And I used some of the religious arguments, which really resonated with them. And by the end of the 10 minutes, one person said, well, I guess I'm a socialist. And a couple others were interested in learning more. I wouldn't say that's all that common that'll happen, that you have a captive audience that will listen to you for 10 minutes straight and you know, maybe take some of it home. But that, for me, was a really heartening moment because I expected people to kind of roll their eyes and stuff and say, all right, well, that was – thank you for your presentation, next. But they listened, and some of it got through, and I've had conversations with some of them since that evening. So it's – you never know. There are any kind of fun event like that your friends do, give it a shot if they're open to it. I think you might be surprised.
That's very interesting. I like the idea of doing this, you know, like presentation thing with friends. That's actually very cute.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, that sounds like a lot of linking, fun.
Yeah. But to give my example, I think I've been lucky in that most of the people have been most of the people in my life have been, I guess, relatively easy to radicalize. Or not relatively easy, maybe it's the way that I approach it or just the conditions around us. But yeah, I just talk and sometimes people listen and sometimes they become they become socialists. It's just how it works. I think the success story that I would like to highlight is a bunch of direct family members and my closest friends. Almost everybody who is in my immediate social circle is now some flavor of left-wing, some of them more like liberal-ish, but many of them much further left than that, which is something that's nice, I guess. And it took a lot of, like I said, again, with a lot of these people, it took years of talking with them, but eventually you do get to them. So that's why I said, yeah, consider friends and family, but also know your limits and know how they might take it and whatnot. Vast majority of these people in my life are young, around my age, some of them slightly older, some of them slightly younger. So that's also something to keep in mind. But not any one person that, you know, that I want to highlight that's like, oh, this person was like a hard nut to crack and finally, you know, a lot of them, before I ramble, my personal experience, most people are very susceptible to socialist ideas. You just got to talk and approach them in the way that they would like to be approached or the way that they would be most receptive to being approached. And then, you know, just kind of talk enough 20-minute segments in between your hangout sessions about socialism will eventually get to them, usually.
Exactly. Couldn't agree more. With me, I guess, I don't know, to diversify the stories a bit, I'm not going to talk about specifically a person that I directly helped come to the light. Jesus, I said it sounds like a cult. Oh my God, maybe it is a cult. Are we doing a cult? Are we doing a cult? Like, let's be honest, teacher. Are we doing a cult? Oh fuck.
Mao is a cult, the shining sun that never sets. Okay, he's a great helmsman.
Oh Lord, we're doing a cult. Okay, well, I guess I'm in this now. So the way I like spreading the cult, I'm kidding. Obviously, we're not, but that's exactly what a person in the cult would say. No, my interesting story would be about a specific individual back in university who, why did I say to diversify the story? Because he was already very much so what we like to call, even though I don't like the term, but left-wing, etc. And I was as well, even though I wasn't as knowledgeable at the point. I think I was a sophomore, maybe junior at back then. And the reason I'm talking about him is that it's not only important to introduce people to a certain thing, but to also, as we talked before, realize at which stage they are at and help them move past it. And with this specific person who I'll refer to as Bobby, brilliant mind, genuinely brilliant mind, we ended up being a sort of wall for each other to bounce ideas off and to constantly actively bring up points and arguments we've heard against the thing we're studying. And we ended up literally helping each other by being partners in this whole thing to grow both as Marxists and through that as people in general, especially at that important stage and point in both of our lives. So I guess that's the story that I would highlight, that you'd be surprised just how many things you can do as a community and not only as an individual, which includes growing your sense of class consciousness and understanding of the way this system works and how potential alternatives to this system could work. So yeah, if somehow magically I lost contact with Bobby, if you're listening to this, Bobby, fucking hit me up for a beer. I don't have no idea where the fuck you went. But yeah, that's it.
That's beautiful. Awesome. Yeah. Now I think it's time for my favorite segment of
books, recommendations.
I'll just say whatever Hakim recommends you, I agree. I also recommend to you. And that is my contribution to the discussion.
JT, do you want to go first or do you want me to bore people with my fucking...
I'll just go real quick, I guess. I'm sure you have some more in-depth stuff. So I catered my few recommendations to an American audience, and these are books that might not be super useful for you, dear listener, but would be good recommendations to offer people you're talking to after a certain point, once they've shown that they're receptive to your ideas. So I would say People's Republic of Walmart is a good one if you wanted to talk about like a planned economy, things like that. Black Shirts and Reds, I know that's on Hakim's list too, so I'll let him talk about that one. Shock Doctrine by Naomi Klein is good for helping Americans understand just the extent of the inhumanity and the crimes that the United States military and leadership committed in Iraq. Common Sense by Thomas Paine, if you've got like a person who's particularly enamored with the Founding Fathers, just be like, oh yeah, have you heard of Thomas Paine? He was basically a socialist before socialism was a thing. It's short, they can read it in a long afternoon, and I think that'll help get through to some of them. And the last one isn't a book, it's the speeches of Eugene V. Debs. He was the socialist candidate back in the 20th century a few times, and he won, I believe, 6% of the presidential vote from a jail cell, which is really cool. But he's very, very much an early Bernie Sanders figure, so that'll resonate with that kind of person. It's all very accessible writing. You can find it all online for free. I think that would be a good place to start. I think that's cool. I've also got some podcasts and YouTube channels to go over, but Hakim, why don't you take over for books?
Sure. My recommendations are more tailored. Again, you need to know your audience. So these recommendations kind of fall into either anti-imperialism or, against what we would consider bourgeois democracy, or against the common talking points against socialism. So in the first group, where we have books against, like, anti-imperialism, the very first of which is Against Empire by Michael Parenti. Excellent work. If you've been a Marxist for a while, then this would be a very boring work for you, actually, because you know everything that's written in. But basically, is as the title says, Against Empire. In it, you'll see discussed everything from like why the United States gets involved in military action abroad, which side benefits, what the economic aspect is, foreign aid and debt and whatnot, what role that plays. It's a very ambitious work that actually delivers. It's really good. It also has a bit of, talking about how modern democracy, particularly in the United States, isn't really democracy, but that we can go to other works for. But that was the first one. Two other books to kind of lump into this section are William Blum's Killing Hope and Austin Murphy's The Triumph of Evil. So with Killing Hope, which is one of my favorite works, actually, this is something that you give any liberal who has any idea some kind of misthought, if that's even a word, that the United States is some sort of force of good in the world, or that, we don't intervene, or we don't do anything, like, we're just generally, we're the good guys in the world, we fight against those evil North Koreans, or Iranians, or Cubans, or whatever, right? In it, basically, it's the subtitle kind of covers it all. U.S. military and CIA interventions since World War II. That's basically the entire book. It will cover practically every, almost every, American intervention from Italy and Greece and other parts of Europe to East Asia to Latin America and everything in between. Beautiful book. As for Austin Murphy's book, this one's a lot more ambitious, I would say, because it covers kind of two things, right? The subtitle, of course, is the book is The Triumph of Evil, and the subtitle is The Reality of the USA's Cold War Victory. In it, they basically talk about how there's several myths about socialism and how they were kind of full of shit when they were talking about socialism, just in general. How socialism took form in the Eastern Bloc, the different stuff like quality of life stuff, freedom and individuality in socialist countries, communism, inefficient economic system, blah, 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 like this stuff, which is very interesting in and of itself. But also there are comparisons between various socialist countries and non-socialist countries. Particularly the author sticks to East Germany, West Germany, but it's very interesting. And of course, the final aspect of the book is the reality of the U.S. Political victory in the Cold War, which is a net negative for the vast majority of the working class all over the world, and that's beautifully presented. And now before I ramble on for too long, there's just two works that I would mention, Black Shirts and Reds and Democracy for the Few, both by Parenti. Black Shirts and Reds is beautiful. Basically, anybody should read it. Even if you've read it now already, you should read it again and give it to everybody who is even tangentially interested in this topic and even those who aren't. The book discusses everything that you want to know about socialism and how it presented itself, how it was presented, fascism, what roles fascism plays, what sides it serves, and basically the both successes of former socialism as well as appropriate criticism of it. Beautiful book and very level-headed. It's the sort of thing that you can give somebody and they would have to be delusional to come out of it and be like, oh, there's a bit of propaganda, because it's so nicely balanced, and that's something Parenti is very good at. Finally, the last book, sorry, I'm taking a while with this. The last book I would recommend is one called Democracy for the Few, also by Parenti. This is more like a textbook. You'd know because it's on its like 10th edition or something now. It's a bit more boring than the other works, but it really gets into the nitty-gritty of why bourgeois democracy is bullshit. That's all I'm going to say about it. If you're interested, just check it out. It's fairly cheap. I think you can get it online, and you can get PDFs of all these works on LibGen, LibGen. Liberal generator, oh no. But yeah, so you should give it a go. Sorry, I took way too long on that.
No, that was great. So I also have a few podcast and YouTube channel recommendations. So for podcasts, Rev Left, Revolutionary Left Radio, is fantastic. Both Akeem and I have been on the show. Brett's a great guy. We really enjoyed it, and it's presented in such a level-headed and kind manner that you'd have a really hard time listening to that and being, you know, offended or defensive. It's a great one. Blowback, both seasons are fantastic. The first one is about the illegal invasion and occupation of Iraq, or the Iraq War, as we call it here in the States. And the second season is about the Cuban Revolution, which is super interesting, really well produced, both absolutely fantastic, at my highest recommendation. If you are a person of faith or the person you're speaking to is religious, Faith and Capital is a pretty decent one. My wife has been listening to that, or she's listened to a few episodes and likes it pretty well. So I'd give that one a try. And then for YouTube channels, obviously, all three of ours, Hakeem Yugopnik and Second Thought. Then there's also Marxist Paul. He does a lot of 101 level stuff as well. He does use some of the jargon, which will help people who you've been speaking to for a little bit but are still beginners. Luna Oi, also great. And then tangentially socialist, we've got Our Changing Climate, which deals with all the climate issues, which is very helpful. In the United States, you get a lot of liberals who are up in arms about climate change, and having a channel that will kind of segue them towards socialist talking points is very helpful. Then you've got Bo of the Fifth Column, who's very kindly, very patient-seeming, and he's a good one to give your Southern friends. Like, I live in Texas, and Bo would be a great one to send some of my friends. Then you got Tom Nicholas. He does longer stuff, very fun. And One Dime, whom I have, I think a couple of us have actually collaborated with now.
Yeah, fucking love
but
One
very
Dime.
Good.
Paul, yeah, and One Dime, even I love all the others, but those two, like my who I cheat on Hakim with.
I love yeah, it.
I'd say they're all great starter channels. There's nothing really that's going to scare them off. There are plenty of other great channels out there too. The list would be just too long to give, but I wouldn't want to overwhelm the people you're talking to. So start with those, pick a couple of those, send them their way, whatever you think would fit their personality best. All right. Well, I think that's all we've got. We covered a lot of ground here.
A lot.
I think a lot of ground.
I hope we didn't overwhelm people with a lot of bullshit. Yeah. Back and forth talking this one. I'm sorry.
No, I think it was good. I mean, all of us get these questions all the time. Like, how do we talk to people? What resources do we use? And I think we've given you guys some of that here. Obviously, we're available. You can message us on our Discord if you've joined.
Yes.
And we're happy to help. But we hope this has given you a little bit to start with, some books to read, some podcasts to listen to, and a little bit of hope that you can do this. You can help bring people over. And every person that we win over is someone that can go on and bring other people over to the cause. And that's huge. So thank you guys for listening. This has been The Deprogram. I'm JT.
I'm Akeem.
And I'm Ugopnik. And this is not a cult.
Take care, guys.